good morning, everyone. My name is Brad Lynn. I'm a third-year doctoral student at the School of Social Work at the University of Buffalo. Getting ready to take my exams this spring, hopefully. So I may go into hibernating or right into hiding after this while I take those. But I'm going to be talking today about a project that we did. It was actually part of a larger project, but what we were doing was talking about some of the needs and gaps that veterans and military family members identified, specifically about healthcare. I guess I need to mention, why don't I move that? I guess I need to mention that I don't have any disclosures, and there were no financial conflicts. I'm a doctoral student, so there's no finances to be in conflicting with, right? Yeah. At any rate, some background information here is, as many of you are probably aware, Eric Shinseki announced that the VA was going to add some 1,600 clinicians, including nurses and social workers and psychologists, and then several hundred support staff in addition to that. But what's interesting is that national level data, and this is data that the federal government collects, suggests that only about a third of the 22 million veterans in the United States actually use the VA. The balance use communities or clinics in the community, public and private hospitals, some connected to universities, and some certainly not. We conclude from this that clinicians who work in any setting are pretty likely to encounter veterans, given the substantial portion of the population that they comprise. There's been quite a few barriers to care identified at the VA through existing research. Certainly one of the biggest problems is that veterans and family members aren't always aware of the particular benefits that they're entitled to receive. And then there's certainly another lack of knowledge that sort of goes hand in hand with that that's related to accessing those benefits. And then certainly some of the healthcare, some of the more common healthcare barriers that we see, things like affordability, convenience, and distance. And then the VA has had sort of, shall we say, a less than sterling reputation over the years. And there certainly have been concerns over the quality of the care, and particularly with mental health, some of the concerns that seeking healthcare would have on one's military career. We found, frankly, an absence of literature that examined the needs of families as it relates to medical care. But the purpose of the current study was to gather information from veterans and military families regarding their healthcare experiences. Now, what's interesting is that we asked about healthcare in any setting. And where I'm from in Buffalo, New York, there's actually quite a few large hospitals and then some smaller regional hospitals. But what our participants tended to talk about was the VA. And I should mention that they were talking about not just the VA that's located in Buffalo, but they were talking about VAs located throughout actually much of the eastern United States, and in one case, VA in the western United States. The larger purpose of this study was to inform an interdisciplinary training program for graduate-level nursing students and social workers, who, particularly those who wanted to work with veterans and military families. But as we started to collect the data, we noticed that there were some interesting findings coming out, and so we were putting together a publication based on what we found. So we conducted 8 focus groups in April and May of 2013. We did 2 with male veterans, one with female veterans, and one with military family members. The military family member focus group was mixed gender, and certainly some of the military family members were actually veterans themselves. Our original intent with the male veterans was to try and do a group of younger vets and then a group of older vets, but scheduling conflicts actually sort of prevented that from happening, and so we ended up having 2 focus groups of male veterans from mixed genders. I'm sorry, of mixed eras. Our facilitators were veterans themselves or military family members themselves. We then had a note taker, often me, with the exception of the female veterans group. We had a note taker to sort of take notes as well. We developed a semi-structured interview guide. We thought that semi-structured was the way to go, so it would give us room to talk about some of the things that we saw sort of emerging in the conversation. And, of course, our Social and Behavioral Sciences Institutional Review Board provided approval for the project. We used a qualitative descriptive content analysis. The site for that is Elo and Kingis. I've got it. I think it's 2009. I've got it if that's something you're interested in. But one of the things that they talk about is that qualitative descriptive is sort of best when there hasn't been a whole lot of work done done in the area. So that's why we went with that. Two of us met over the course of the summer of 2013. To code the data. We coded it separately, then met to compare findings. And to sort of increase the rigor of the study, increase the rigor of our findings, we presented our initial findings to the other moderators and stakeholders and people who were familiar with the data, and then sort of returned once again to the data to sort of further refine our findings. We actually did that about three times. To ensure that what we were sort of extracting from the data was sort of being truthful. The part that I think is the most interesting part of this presentation is actually the 10 themes that emerged. Among the veterans and family members, there were 10 of them, some related to individual interactions with providers and some related to things that are sort of features of the healthcare system, and I'm going to take you through those right now. The first one, and now it's important to point out that this is actually something that veterans and military family members appreciated. So these weren't all sort of themes that are sort of bashing the VA or critical of the VA. But the thing that sort of emerged from all focus groups was how important the idea of respect for personhood was. And this female veteran said, "One doctor was amazing. I talked to him once, and he listened and provided feedback like he was absorbing what I was saying and validating it. He was just great." That, however, stands in contrast to this next theme, which we label as negation or minimization of concerns. This male veteran here in this first quote said, "I tore my rotator cuff in the Marine Corps, and when I went to do the disability claim, I ended up saying, 'Forget it.' I went down to the doctor, they scanned my arm and looked at it. They said, 'You have scar tissue, we don't think you tore it. Drink some water.' They prescribed me Motrin." This female veteran, and from here we get the namesake of our presentation and the publication that we're putting together, "They don't get that when we say there's something wrong, we're serious. We don't complain about the little things." And I love this quote because I think it sort of captures the stoicism with which service members are expected to function, sort of not acknowledge their problems. But what I think this sort of belies is that when sort of a complaint does rise to the point where a veteran is going to complain about it, that means it's pretty serious because they've already surpassed sort of their ability to cope in the stoicism that they're expected to have. Another provider-level theme was this idea of lack of follow-through, and this male veteran talking about some pain medication said, "You have to have a paper script to get your pain meds renewed, and the physician forgets to fill out the script. So then she's gone for like 4 weeks. They kept telling me she didn't write your paper script. We can't do anything about it without a paper script." So this idea that someone would leave town, I believe on vacation in this instance, but not do it, you know, but leave without sort of taking care of her patients was particularly troubling, and meant actually that this male veteran had to sort of live with a substantial amount of pain for quite some time. But here again, one of the things that veterans appreciated was this idea of open information sharing. This male veteran said, "Tell me the truth and tell me what you're going to do. Tell me how we're going to work this out. Then I know what to expect because I have the information and I can process that." And certainly this quote was accompanied by a number of stories where veterans and military families, too, talked about sort of providers sharing information with them and sharing what it was they were going to do or what it was they were going to experience as they you know, proceeded through the healthcare system. And that was something that they appreciated and almost universally asked for. These next group of themes have to do with sort of the system level, and so we attributed these more to the healthcare system than You're welcome to come in if you want. we attributed these more to the system than the provider. And I think when I read the quotes to you, you'll see why. So one of the things that they valued, and here again, here's one of these points when people are sort of praising the VA, right? But they appreciated sustained and accessible care. And so this male veteran said, within 10 days from walking in the first time, I was in a VA hospital getting help for my PTSD. Within 2 months after I started individual therapy, my counselor had me connected with another service officer and started a PTSD claim. This female veteran sort of echoes this man's sentiments when she said, the care I was given while I was at the VA was phenomenal. The staff was just excellent as far as caring and following up on me. Even after I had been released, the follow-up calls that I got were phenomenal. So this stands really in contrast to perhaps the reputation of the VA in decades previous. However, veterans and certainly family members notice that the VA system is incredibly overburdened, and there are certainly consequences to that. This male veteran said, she was just so focused on getting me in and getting me out, which I understand, but she doesn't really know me, and I was trying to tell her certain things that would better help me. So he didn't even feel as though he had the time to sort of explain what it was that was going on with him, and certainly not to the point where he felt like the provider was actually listening to him. This female family member said, so there are people who may be suicidal, who may have TBIs or comorbid disorders, who aren't able to get services because the doors are full, the beds are full, the social workers are full, everyone is full, so where do they go? And she went on to talk about people who just sort of go home and are having all kinds of mental health problems and expect their family members to care for them. Well, I think families can only tolerate that for so long before sort of other things are looked for. Our veterans, our participants also noted that the VA system is often unresponsive and inflexible. This female veteran was actually, when she said this, I'll read it to you in a second, she was actually referring to specialty care. And she said, if you find that you can't make an appointment for even a really good reason, too bad, now you have to wait for the next month. They won't reschedule you. She went on to say that she knows this is done to sort of prevent the wasting of resources, but she actually resented sort of being characterized as someone who was malingering or someone who was taking care, taking up appointments and not following through on them. She said that she actually needed to reschedule because of a child care issue, right? So it was something that was perfectly legitimate and something that just sort of characterizes life, right? Like, stuff just happens and you have to rearrange sometimes, but she was incredibly frustrated. And it actually put her, she went on to say, in a very difficult situation because this particular form of specialty care actually alleviated some of the pain that she was living. So the choice was between caring for her children or going to get some specialty care that would alleviate pain. And if she missed the appointment, then it was sort of another month before she could go and experience the relief, the pain relief associated with that particular care. And certainly the VA system is incredibly difficult to navigate. This male veteran said, if you don't have that roadmap in front of you, you're screwed. Another male veteran said, where I've ended up through the whole process for the last 3 years is just being confused, not knowing what's going on, not having nobody else to talk to. And in fact, one of the things we noticed was that when veterans and certainly family members too experience this incredibly complex system, one of the things they do is they give up. And so they just live with their problems after that. Certainly they may do other things too. They may seek private care. They may pay for it out of pocket. And as our next presenter will talk about, they may also find an advocate. But it's troubling to me that one of the things they do is just sort of give up. And then, of course, the VA has a reputation for not managing records well. And this male veteran said, I'm not saying once in a while. I'm saying every single time they will lose your file. I had mine mailed from Kansas straight to this particular VA, to the records room, and they lost it. So make sure you have your own copy of your entire file, and when you give it to them, give them a copy of your copy. Don't let go of your copy. One of the things we actually called this, we called this, was a shadow chart. And this was another strategy that our participants used to sort of manage their relationship with the VA. So they would often sort of keep notes or take a copy of their chart, the notes that the provider was making, and keep them so that they could be absolutely certain that what was going into their medical record was something that was accurate. We noticed a number of themes that were particularly troubling to women, and I was saying here this morning that one of the things our female veterans said was that when they would go in to get care, the provider would ask them what branch of service their husbands were in. And so their own military service wasn't recognized, even when they would sort of advocate for themselves and say, well, no, I'm the one who's the veteran. But this other thing that emerged was actually this comment about military sexual trauma, and that's what MST stands for. This female veteran said, MST needs to be addressed, definitely, because it's rampant in the military, but that's not the only thing that we're concerned about. And so this is actually in response to this universal screening for military sexual trauma. And the sentiment that I get was that our female veterans in this study were having trouble being seen for anything other than military sexual trauma. It's as if the providers were looking for that, and perhaps maybe they should be screening for it, because that's certainly what the data suggests. But our participants were saying, I've got problems other than that I'm interested in getting help for, and I'd like you to hear that. So this theme actually for me is very close to one of the first themes that I talked about, which was negation or minimization of concerns. Here this female veteran and family member said, I go to the VA and want the medical services. I want medical services for other things other than the military sexual trauma. So moving into the discussion here, certainly to reiterate some of what sort of these themes taken together sort of suggest, is that attentive providers, certainly that's something that's very much appreciated. This idea of respect for personhood, negation of concerns, unclear communication, that's not appreciated. And although for some of us, particularly those of us in clinical disciplines, that may seem like something that should just happen as a matter of course, it doesn't always. And perhaps that's because the VA system is incredibly complex, it's overburdened, they're expected to do a lot with few resources. But it's important that providers keep in mind that the veterans and participants and military families who are consuming the healthcare don't necessarily care that the system is overburdened or that resources are scarce. They need medical care, and it's important for the providers at the VA to provide that for them. Certainly, with the system level themes, the accessible system and the ongoing care was viewed as favorable, and of course, the overburdened, slow, and rigid system were sources of frustration and disappointment. One of the things, I guess, to sort of begin wrapping up here, one of the things that I often think about was that the servicemen and women who have made all kinds of sacrifices received really incredible care in the military. And the care that they received in the military was sort of the same disciplined and highly organized and, dare I say it, even efficient care that sort of other systems in the military work with. And so a lot of veterans and certainly family members end up taking these same expectations from their experience in the military and applying them to the civilian system of care, i.e. the VA. And so we're arguing that it's important for providers who work in the VA to view their duty as something that's profound. The other thing that we're taking away from our data is this idea of military cultural competence. We would argue that culturally competent care is congruent with military values and this set of expectations that consumers are bringing with them. I think, and certainly future research needs to investigate this, but I think it will help to reduce the negative sentiments. But let me talk just for a second about what exactly is military cultural competence. Well, certainly it encompasses things like military values and sort of things like branches of service and the creeds associated with each one. But it's more than that. It's issues related to deployment and separation. It's the stressors associated with being in the military. It's the stressors associated with having a service or a loved one in service. And so we're arguing that providers who want to work with service men and women, veterans, and military family members, regardless of whether or not they want to work in the VA, should really think about becoming culturally competent in a military context. I would be remiss if I didn't mention a couple of limitations in this study. Our participants were drawn from one area, a medium-sized city in the northeast United States. Our data are cross-sectional, and certainly there were, our participants were polled at a time when the VA is going through a number of sort of transformations, particularly in the public sphere, and I think they're doing a lot to try and improve their reputation. So were these data to be collected again? Even now, a short year and a half later, I suspect they might be different. And certainly our snowball sampling methodology can be considered a limitation, although I actually appreciated it because it helped to get the numbers of the participants up. So with that, I'll turn it over to the next presenter or take some questions. Thank you very much for your time.